bag of sulfur, and one small tin of aspirins. Not much, hardly anything, but it was a start. Before she went into cryosleep and awoke in the next century, Mildred had been a highly trained physician. But without tools and chems, there was little the doctor could do but offer a smile to the dying. The road rose in a gentle swell, bringing the wall and gate of the nameless ville into view. A gurgling creek flowed alongside the road, leading toward the huge, gaping crater of the stone quarry. To their left was a ragged pile of busted shale rising 100 feet tall. It was no more than a molehill, really, compared to the Shen Mountains, cresting over the western horizon. The gentle wind was pushing the corpses, hanging from the gallows, to and fro like a clock pendulum, the flock of crows taking flight and landing again as they tried to feed on the dead humans without interruption. A sudden flurry of movement at the gate caught Ryan's eye, and he noted the guards stuff loaves of steaming black bread into the pockets of their coats and frantically ready their blasters. The companions paused for a while until the guards at the gate were prepared for visitors, then proceeded at a slow pace, watching the bushes for snipers or traps.
Remington 22 hunting rifle on the left.
J.B. fingered the H.E. grenade in the pocket of his leather jacket.
Slow. Jams a lot and not very accurate.
The other looks military.
Hands in his pockets, Dean's fingers tightened on the grip of his blaster. His father eased the safety off his long blaster.
It is. That's a BAR, Browning auto rifle. 30 long, and one of the best blasters around. We're already in range, so stay sharp.
Wonder if they are thinking the same as us.
Smiling villains?
Yeah.
They started forward again.
Damn well should be.
Doc clicked back the hammer of his monstrous Lamar pistol.
Unless they are total fools.
As the companions came abreast of a busted stone lintel lying on the berm, the big guard with a beard called out to them.
That's close enough, outlanders.
Oddly, the man's eyebrows and the hair under his hat were burnished crimson like polished copper, but his beard was jet black.
What do you want?
Ryan noticed that the second guard was a good distance away from the first, and stationed behind a water barrel for additional protection. Smart. These men knew their jobs, even if they were poor shots. There were only faint traces of blood on the ground, a few insects scurrying to quickly harvest the nutrient-rich soil before it dried.
We're just travelers who want to get out of the bastard cold.
Well, outlanders be welcome.
A wisp of steam rose from the hot bread in his pocket, the tantalizing smell, a knife in Ryan's rumbling stomach.
Always ready for a bit more trading as the Baron.
Fair enough. This place got a name?
Rockville.
Not a particularly original name for a ville built in a stone quarry, but Ryan made no comment. He had heard worse.
We got goods to trade.
JB's empty hands hung open at his sides. But the Uzi was there on his shoulder for the world to see, along with the scattergun.
I suppose so. Got enough blasters showing, it's the truth. Mercies, I suppose.
Mercies?
Hardly.
We fight only to defend ourselves.
Ryan felt his temper rise to the insult.
Not for Jack, or a cut of the booty.
The man who sells his honor sells nothing he ever...
Sounds good, because we don't take Bigville Jack here. The Barons might trade with it, but out here we only take what can be used. What you have, furs or fuel?
I can hear from your bellies it ain't food.
The second guard's blaster still held level and ready, as if expecting treachery. Slowly reaching into a pocket, Ryan pulled out a cardboard box marked Remington.
Got a full box of 38 longs here. 50 live rounds with no corrosion. That buy us food and beds for a night?
Ha ha ha! Shit and be damned, One Eye. That'll buy the lot of you the best rooms and food we got for a week, plus a night with Mad Jennifer, the tightest piece of ass this side of the Shins.
No thanks. We brought our own.
And the name is Ryan.
Russell.
The man with a beard jerked a dirty thumb at the other sec man.
And he's Einstein.
The skinny guard grunted in acknowledgement and stepped away from the gate, clearing the entrance.
Well, it's almost dusk and time for our supper, so come on in if you're going to stay for the night. There ain't no toll coming or going. This ain't Front Royal, you know.
As he walked past the man, the unexpected words hit Ryan hard, but he forced his face to stay neutral and kept moving along with the rest of the companions. The thick wooden gate closed behind them with a boom, and the Sekhmen locked it with a rusty steel chain. The wind cutting through their clothes noticeably lessened, and everybody stood a bit taller. Christy eased down the hammer of her wheel gun.
Did you hear that about Royal? Wonder what that was about.
Tolls on travelers. That doesn't sound like Nathan.
Maybe he's not in charge anymore, or there was a famine or something.
Brushing back his long black hair, Ryan chewed that over.
A famine. Possible.
You called him nephew. Is he blood kin?
Mildred turned up her collar.
Son of my dead brother.
Kin helps kin.
The woman said it as if that were an immutable law of the universe. Ryan didn't reply, his scarred face somber in dark thoughts. Pausing at an intersection of two streets, the companions studied the layout of the ville. The town was laid out in neat rows of log cabins, stores, and homes, dark smoke curling from a dozen crude stone chimneys. A flagpole stood in the middle of the ville common, but no flag fluttered from the top. A revolutionary cannon sat at its base, the antique surrounded by a circle of sandbag walls, a stack of iron balls conveniently nearby. It was clearly a functioning piece of city armament. A big horse corral was off to the side, and a small paddock for cattle stood empty next to a butcher's slaughterhouse. Blocks away, the water wheel turned steadily, creaking loudly in protest as it endlessly worked at whatever was going on inside the building alongside. The windows were covered with shutters, and the one door closed. No smoke rose from that chimney. Numerous folks, bundled against the night, were scurrying from house to house, carrying wood for fireplaces or toting wicker baskets that steamed in the dwindling light. High on the side of the slag pile was a wooden cabin, with a zigzagging staircase scaling the jagged slope to reach the small building. As Ryan stared, there came a brief wink of reflected light.
Somebody with binocs watching us.
JB glanced sideways. Ryan maintained his stride.
I saw. Stay loose.
Indeed, sir. We are coolness personified.
Jack gave a noncommittal grunt.
Hey, there's the inn. About freaking time.
Mildred hobbled along on her crude crutch. Situated on a corner across the compound was a brightly lit building with horses and bikes parked in front. A sign was suspended from the overhanging roof with an actual knife and fork nailed to the board.
You tired?
It was obvious that the bad ankle hurt a lot more than Mildred was letting on. Holding back a wince as her tender foot accidentally touched the uneven ground, Mildred forced a smile.
No, just starving.
Walking slowly across the compound, the companions went around the sandbag nest, coming close to the gallows and the hanging men. Only heads were visible over the top of the ville wall. They could hear the anguished sobs of the live prisoner as the black crows pecked at the bleeding scabs on his cheek and neck. His left ear was completely gone, as were both eyes, the empty sockets oozing blood and a clear, viscous fluid. The facial bones of his dead partner showed white through the gaping rifts in his tattered flesh. Pausing in mid-step, Ryan turned on a heel with his 9mm Sig Sauer in hand. The silenced weapon coughed once, and 100 paces away, the head of the prisoner exploded in a grisly spray of bone and blood. Gingerly picking the hot brass off the ground, Ryan pocketed the spent cartridge.
Dad?
That's no way for anybody to die. You got an enemy, you kill him. Torture only makes you worse than them.
He looked hard at the boy.
The traitor taught me that. Now you know it too.
Not quite sure he fully understood, Dean nodded and decided to think long on this event, since it was important enough for his father to waste a live round on a total stranger. JB walked abreast of his friend.
Good shot.
The wind was with me.
Past the compound, the muddy road displayed random patches of gravel and macadam under the thick covering of red dirt, showing that this had once been a paved street. A big man in a heavy bearskin coat watched them cross the avenue with an expression of extreme dislike. Christie paused to stare at the man, and he turned to walk away quickly, his massive shoulders hunched against the mounting winds.
Real friendly folks.
Christie checked the draw of her blaster as a precaution.